In 1979, a mostly nonviolent revolution in Iran toppled the Shah and led to formation of an Islamic Republic. Almost overnight, Iran changed dramatically from a pro-Western authoritarian monarchy to an anti-Western theocracy. The political and social earthquake from the revolution drove many Iranians into exile. 40 years on, tremors continue far beyond Tehran. Welcome to Velocity of Content. I'm Christopher Keneally for CCC. Estimates vary, but at least 3 million Iranians have emigrated since 1979. The United States has the largest such community, centered in Los Angeles and fancifully called Tehrangelis. Many other Iranians and their families live in Turkey, Germany, Canada, and the United Kingdom. In publishing, a dozen independent Persian publishers operate outside Iran, including Nogam e-Publishing in London, which uses crowdfunding to publish censored Iranian authors. In 2016, Nogam managing editor Azadeh Pasipour organized the first ever Persian book fair outside Iran, Tehran Book Fair Uncensored. In December 2020, the fair went virtual in light of the coronavirus pandemic. Azadeh Pasipour is a three-time nominee for the International Publishers Association Award Le Prix Voltaire, recognizing a significant contribution to the defense and promotion of freedom to publish in the world. In 2018, the Association of American Publishers presented her with the Jerry Labor Award, honoring a book publisher outside the United States who has demonstrated courage and fortitude in defending freedom of expression. Azadeh Pasipour joins me now from London. Welcome to the program. Salam Chitori.
Hello and thank you. It's my pleasure to join your program.
We look forward very much to learning about the situation for writers in exile from Iran, but also about what it's like for Iranians in country to write, to publish, and to read. And you have written that every book must go through the scrutiny mechanism of the Ministry of Culture and Islamic Guidance Book Office in order to get a permit, and that failing to get that permission and still publishing a book puts the author and presumably the publisher in jeopardy.
Yes, I mean, the censorship, we were familiar with censorship even before the revolution, but the red lines were maybe just like political, and it was about maybe if you were criticizing the monarchy, you had problems in publishing things. But after revolution, I mean, the censorship just covered everything in life because the government wanted to promote, as they mention, ideological, you know, Islamic and revolutionary values. And every book, and it actually concerns other creative products as well, like music, films, everything that you produce needs to go to the ministry and they need to just review it and give you a permission. So many products are getting censored or maybe banned or just altered. So they just give you notices and they call it corrections and you need to correct them as per their guidelines. I mean, they don't have any like printed or official guidelines, but when they review your book, your magazine, I mean, your music or your film, you need to just pay attention to the notes that they give you, and you change them.
And these taboo subjects, they're far-ranging. There's some of the obvious ones, swimsuits, men and women swimming together, friendship or love between members of the opposite sex. Of course, sadly, any hint of LGBTQ relationships, but it is so far more than just those.
It's like everything, because they want to control your way of living and way of thinking. And anything outside of that, anything outside of their own policies and ideology, they don't tolerate it. So it's not just a list. When the people ask me to give them examples, I can just give you some examples. For example, in every book, in translation, if somebody drinks wine, you just translate it to maybe orange juice. So, you know, in the book, if you go to a bar, you know, it translates to they went to a cafe and drank coffee. So I can give you these examples, but it's like a really broadened area, and it's really a direct control from the government on everything that is going to publish. So it started from just maybe political issues, but they just expanded to everything. And as, I mean, people progress in the world, as new issues come up, like international issues, you know, discriminations, and even scientific issues come up, they notice things don't go in line with their policies. So they start new red lines as we go further and further.
Well, one of the areas where red lines have been drawn much more sharply recently is in textbooks. And you have written about the restrictions that minimize the role of girls and women in textbooks and to promote or reflect revolutionary and Islamic values. What does this mean? What is the impact for educational materials and for school children and others?
I mean, basically, discrimination is embedded in the educational system in Iran. So all the textbooks, everything that you learn in the schools and in university needs to go by these revolutionary and Islamic values. I mean, the Islamic values, I say, is like the translation of the Islamic Republic of Iran. So it's not even an Islam that maybe other states believe in. But when the policy is that women are born to obey and to have families, to raise children, it doesn't go with anything else. So anything else is the red line, is a no-no for women. But if you watch how Iran society evolved over the past 40 years, the number of women going to university, I think over the past 10 years, sometimes even more than half of the students were women. And now they work in different fields, but it is still, they don't promote anything in the schools. So when you're a child, I mean, because our schools are segregated, so girls go to girls' school, boys go to boys' school, they never mix. And I mean, the first encounter is in the university that they see each other. They can sit in a class, and like the right side women, the left side men. They don't like women to think they can be, you know, anyone. They can do anything. So the movement that you see in outside world of Iran is like it's like a cultural shock when people, I mean, immigrate, they go and see how world works. It's just exactly the opposite what is happening inside Iran. I should mention that the private sector in Iran, I'm just talking about the publishing. The private sector is trying to make up for it. So there are many private, you know, small publishing houses that are trying to produce new material for new generation to promote equality, gender equality, and to just promote women and girls empowerment. But it is not enough. When you compare it to the power that educational system has and the national curriculum has, it is not enough. But I can be hopeful that people and the new generations are trying to make up for it. Sometimes they get stopped. For example, I was chatting with one of the authors that write for young adults and children about, for example, evolution, about animals. And he said that since a couple of years ago, the evolution now joined the long list of red lines. So you cannot talk about it. You know, God created men and then women, and that's it. You cannot talk about the evolution. and how does it work?
You have done a great deal to enable the independent Persian publishing community outside of Iran to make itself better known. And in 2016, you helped to found the first ever Persian book fair outside of Iran. It was called Tehran Book Fair Uncensored. And tell us about some of the highlights of the most recent program.
Yes, I mean, since 40 years ago, many independent publishers in exile formed first in the US and Europe. But the thing is that I have to emphasize that what we do is more like political act than business. So all of us struggle, like we have financial problems and we have like a small and fragile businesses. But we try to publish material that cannot be published inside Iran, or if we publish outside Iran, they cannot go inside the country. Having only 1 month to just prepare the virtual ones in 2020, this book fair was a success. And a couple of things happened that and gave us really good experiences. It was like a learning curve for us as well, because these independent publishers in exile come from different background and different, for example, age difference. We are from different generations. So we could encourage older generation to come and use new online technologies. For example, I had like one-to-one training with my older colleagues to use Instagram Live, to use Zoom, to just have these online talks or book launches or interviews and Q&As with the writers and translators. And it was really successful. They picked it up and they loved it. And I mean, they are actually doing it on like monthly basis after the book fair. The other thing is that when we started this book fair, we started small from among 7 or 8 publishers. Then we joined, you know, in with other publishers that we knew in the world. This time, one of the highlights was we collaborated with some other organizations like freedom of speech organizations, with other foundations, with online magazines that are active outside of Iran. And they have books, they create really important content about, you know, philosophy, society, sociology, or political, or even literature. And these collaborations really gave us a perspective, and I am sure that the next one, if we can have a physical book fair in Europe and the US, we can have a stronger presence in online and virtual programs as well, because now we know, you know, how we can do it better and how we can just communicate with diaspora and even people inside Iran.
Well, it sounds like the works that you publish and the programs you organize are able to penetrate the Iranian government's internet firewall then.
Well, actually, I mean, many websites and many social networks in Iran are filtered now. So the thing is that even my 70-year-old dad knows how to use VPN. So they all have access to these circumvention tools, and people are just bypassing internet censorship. It is part of everyday life in Iran now. Our websites, for example, are all filtered in Iran, but like 70% of my audience come from Iran. And what we do in Nogam, that is, well, a bit different from my other colleagues, is that every title that we publish in Nogam comes with a free ebook for Iranian inside the country. And then we have like the print version that we sell, and the money that comes from selling this printed or ebooks outside of Iran, the money goes to produce more books for Iran for free.
Well, I have a last question, one that interests me as an Irishman. In May, Nogam will publish a second volume of a six-volume project translating Ulysses by James Joyce into Farsi. Tell us how you came to work on this and why you think it's significant.
I mean, Ulysses published around 100 years ago and never were translated completely in Persian in Iran. And one of the main problems was censorship. And the censorship is not just that couple of sentences or words. It would like mutilate the book because some of the chapters really cannot be translated. There were at other attempts, actually, some scholars translated and published, for example, first two or three chapters. But then I read an interview that one of the news agency made with Dr. Akram Pedramnia. She's a translator, and she is a writer and translator, and she was famous with her previous work that she translated Lolita by Nabokov. So when I read that she has started translating Ulysses by James Joyce, I contacted her, and we both have a common cause, and it was really a nice united and project that we were both interested in. And she was actually looking for a publisher outside of Iran, because inside of Iran she was sure that the book cannot be published. And we started working, and we contacted Literature Ireland, the foundation that promotes Irish literature. And one of the significant things about this is that this is not merely translation, and that for that reason, the translation comes in six volumes, because it's like a mixed project that is research and translation. So Dr. Pedramnia is translating thousands of references and anecdotes, and just to have this complete work and for readers to read Ulysses and understand these one of the most important classics ever published in the world. And now Literature Ireland support us on this project. We publish actually the second volume in London in November 2020, so it was the printed version, and the ebook is now, we are now preparing this for May, for the end of May 2021, that it will be published for free for Iran and for all Farsi speakers.
Well, Azadeh Pasipour, thank you for joining me today on CCC's Velocity of Content.
Thank you for having me.
The producer for our program is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. You can follow Velocity of Content on Twitter and Facebook. I'm Christopher Keneally. Goodbye for now.